Ooz and Oz, a maker profile of Natalie Jeremijenko from Make Magazine, written and read by Dale Doherty. "We take in abandoned robotic dogs," says Natalie Jeremijenko. She gets a warm laugh from a room full of geeks at O'Reilly's Emerging Technology Conference, ETEC, in San Diego this past March. "Most people tire of their robotic dogs and end up selling them on eBay. We need to rethink toys," she adds. "Most of them are not truly engaging and have very little ability to teach us anything about the world we live in." Her idea is to release these domestic robots into the wild where, in the case of the Feral Robotics Project, hacked toy dog robots could interact with each other and with humans as they sniff out contaminants in a landfill. An Australian trained as an engineer, Jeremijenko recalls that her mother had the first microwave in Australia. "She believed that machines would one day do everything for us," says Jeremijenko, and immediately adds, "She was wrong." Jeremijenko taught in the mechanical engineering department at Yale, where she first began experimenting with robotic dogs. Recently, Jeremijenko accepted a new appointment in the visual arts department at the University of California at San Diego, UCSD, where she is now teaching art students just enough electronics and programming to undertake her pet projects. These days, she sees herself moving between the worlds of engineering and art, just as she finds herself moving back and forth between New York and San Diego. "I work on examining the cultural opportunities that technological innovations provide," she explains. She is particularly interested in the emerging field of social robotics. "I want to explore what's been left out of social robotics, which is more than having a handful of robots in a room. What does it mean to think of social robots, not just in terms of the robots, but in terms of the people, too?" Taunting waterfowl and talking with fish. With the Ooz project, which is zoo spelled backwards and got its start in the Netherlands, Jeremijenko experimented with a robotic goose that can play with, chase, and terrorize other geese. In addition, the robotic goose can make goose sounds, and it will record and play back sounds made by other geese. It is possible to build a database of goose sounds, and humans can learn to communicate with geese through these interactions. "Can we re-script our interactions with nature?" she asks. "Instead of hunting geese, we can approach and talk to them, and likely annoy them." She says that this project is an example of using the open structure of participation and that interacting with a goose is much better than playing inside a closed system, such as a video game. Another project allows people and fish to communicate. A board is placed in water with a hole above the waterline and a hole below the waterline. When a hand reaches inside the top hole, say to feed fish, the light goes on, telling fish that a human is there to feed them. When a fish passes through the lower hole, the light also goes on, letting a human know that there is a fish waiting to be fed. "This shows you how technologies can be used to create an architecture of reciprocity," Jeremijenko remarks. The fish project was designed for a demonstration in Dublin, and she'd like to see it deployed in the Hudson River, the mention of which sends her on a riff. "We've designed an edible lure for fish. They can eat it, and so can humans. Instead of hooks, the lure contains PCB chelating agents, so we can do something good for the fish." She seems to take off in a different direction herself midstream. "Do you know where all the drugs we take end up? All the antidepressants? They end up in the river. Can you imagine what's in the Hudson River? That's what we're doing to the fish and the frogs." Jeremijenko's projects have more in common with performance art than with traditional science experiments. They are purposely designed to engage an audience and evoke a response. She invites the press to what she calls a mediagenic event so that she can reach this audience. Jeremijenko is only part wizard. The other part is pure Oz. Robot School. On the day we caught up with Jeremijenko, she was planning to have her class release a pack of feral robotic dogs on the Mission Bay landfill in San Diego. Local media, along with political figures, were invited. As we trail along, Jeremijenko pops her head into the room designed as an art studio that serves as the students' shared lab space. "Will you be ready in 5 minutes?" she asks. Nobody answers. The students' heads are focusing down on their robotic dogs, which suffer a variety of last-minute problems. Some students are soldering, others are twisting wires. When Jeremijenko asks the same question again, the resounding reply is no. "We have to hurry," she urges them, knowing that there are people waiting at the landfill. Tristan Schoen, the teaching assistant, shuffles from one group to the next, trying to figure out which dogs are close to working and which are unsalvageable. Jeremijenko returns to her own office, which is filled with dozens of robotic dogs and a real white rabbit. "I feed her the same food I eat," she remarks. The 9 students work for about 3 to 4 weeks on the project after first locating their abandoned dogs. They consult web pages that tell them how to find dogs and upgrade them, based on instructions Jeremijenko created initially and which have been improved upon by others and shared over the internet. Student John Kalmeyer wrote in the class wiki, "I went to Goodwill and bought one of the really ugly Dalmatian techno dogs for $4.93. I was surprised to find out it even worked, which is to say that when I switched the on-off switch, it hobbled forward and wagged its lone remaining ear." Perversely, he named it Kitty Kitty. Another student, Stephen Shen, bought an iCybi for $55 on eBay, while Candace Story took a trip home to adopt her little sister's techno. This Christmas present sat on the shelf for several years after her little sister turned out to be a live cat person. Jeff Meow bought a very furry dog known at Toys R Us as the Tiger Go-Go My Talkin' Pup, which sells for $30. He named it Mia Mia and had to perform major surgery on his dog, but before doing so, he writes that he gently applied chloroform to sedate her before rolling her onto her back and exposing her underbelly. He proceeded to remove the skin carefully before taking out various screws to create openings in the head and belly for new components. How to hack a robotic dog. There are 3 basic upgrades. The first is to increase their range of motion. This involves gently amputating the legs, Jeremijenko says, and lowering the center of gravity, as well as widening the wheelbase. A simple way to do that is to fit the robotic dog onto a chassis of a used RC car, as Chen's group did. The second upgrade is to give the dog a better brain. The class used the Cockroach 2 microcontroller and wrote some C code and then found a way to attach the logic board to the dog. The goal is to have the dog's brain follow its nose, which is the third upgrade, a nose that can sniff out environmental toxins. Each dog was outfitted with a sensor that measures the amount of solvent vapor in the air. Depending on the level of toxicity, the sensor will output a different voltage. From Orphan to Avenger, "We have to go now," comes the professor's final instruction. The students begin placing their dogs and spare parts in laundry baskets and rush out to the cars for a 20-minute drive to the Mission Bay landfill. On the way to the landfill in the back of a van without seats, Jeremijenko explains that using toys exploits the markets of scale for commercial toy production. This is the least expensive way to get your hands on corporate toys and rethink the corporate scripts of interaction. She likes the iCybi, which she calls the high end of the low end for robotic dogs. She dislikes the Sony Aibo, saying that they are more expensive and not very interesting. The largest market for the Sony Aibo, she adds snidely, is engineering schools, which pay about $2,500 per pet, even with an academic discount. In addition to UCSD, there are feral robotic projects at Cornell University and in Dublin, London, San Francisco, and Brisbane, Australia. "We are forming an online distributed community," explains Jeremijenko, "which is interested in the low-cost adaptation of robotic dogs into activist instruments for exploring the local environment." Her goal is to release the dogs on sites of community interest, such as Mission Bay. "This site was used by local military contractors," she adds, "where they dumped several thousand barrels in an unlined landfill right next to SeaWorld. It's at the former mouth of the San Diego River, so there's a good deal of groundwater." Who let the dogs out? When we arrive at the site, Jeremijenko was surprised by the number of video cameras and journalists. The landfill is also used as an airstrip for remote-controlled airplanes, and throughout the day, these hobbyists seem irritated by the presence of both the dogs and the people. If that wasn't annoying enough, the students are launching a large red balloon, which is outfitted with a rig to hold a video camera and is steered into position by ropes. The balloon captures a god's-eye view of the track. At the release of the feral dog pack, only one of the 5 seems to be actually work as expected. It's Mia Mia, the furry one, the one least likely to become feral. Others are experiencing fits before starting. The wheels spin, and soon most of them are spreading out over the dirt. Each dog's brain contains space-filling algorithms that describe how to cover the territory and what to do when they detect a toxic substance. Jeremijenko explains that since the dogs are programmed to respond to toxins, humans can learn by watching this response. It provides people with evidence. None of the dogs actually senses any sign of the contaminants on the site, the release of a gas from a canister used for testing is discovered by Qian's ICE-Cybe robot. This dog circles back following its nose and runs into the canister and stops. Later at eTech, Jeremijenko says, "By creating these dogs and releasing them as a pack, we create a mediagenic event that facilitates evidence-driven discussion. Because the dogs follow the concentration gradients, they display the information with their movements. Anyone, from a four-year-old to a grandmother, can understand what the dogs are doing. With a site like this, we can have information that's unclear, and there are many diverse, interested people. There might be an EPA report on the site, or there might not be, and the report might be 15 years old, or it might not be. Where does this information come from, and how much of it is made public?" Finally, she adds, "What happens when you change who has the evidence? You change the structure of participation between the expert audience and the lay audience. People can become the experts, and you know what? They are."